I'm C.M. Magaña from the Strange and Unusual podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I'm the chief editor tonight, SP, and your reporters for this special episode of 166 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Look, it's the teeny-weeny Englishman.
Aren't all Englishmen teeny-weeny?
Maybe.
Okay. And Michelle.
In order to save the world, we have to erase ourselves.
Didn't they make a movie about that called Eraser?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I think so. Okay, we'll get that straightened out later. This podcast is recorded on Sunday, August 27th, 2017, and broadcast live from the Starling Tribune headquarters studios via www.geeks.live. Remember, our newspaper is full of spoilers, facts, and speculations about Arrow and the rest of the DC TV, film, and comic universe.
So today we'll be discussing Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could and probably will impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as the other CW shows such as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, and maybe even Black Lightning at some point in time.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com. We can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Woohoo! Lots of cool stuff over at Gunna Geek. We'll talk about that later. In the meantime, I think it's time to get into this episode. Michelle, go ahead and break it down for us.
Well, we are finally at the season finale of season 2, Aruba. It's episode 17. It originally aired Tuesday, April 4, 2017. Director, Rob Seidenglanz. Credits include 2 Riverdale, 2 episodes of Legend, 6 Blind Spot, and 1 episode of Suits. Writers, Phil Klemmer. Done 9 Legends, 3 of the Tomorrow People, 12 Chuck, and 12 episodes of Veronica Mars. And the big guy, Mark Guggenheim, executive producer of Legends and Arrow. Written 15 Arrow, 9 Legends, and the Green Lantern movie. I did not know this.
Yes, of course he's responsible for that epic piece of film.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with.
Mark, you're my hero. All right, when this aired in April 4th, 2017, Legends was actually the only show that week on the CW. We didn't have an episode of Supergirl, Flash, or Arrow. They just cleared the decks for this epic season finale of Legends of Tomorrow, and it came through with a live rating of 1.52 and a live plus DVR rating of 2.39. So that, for a season finale,
I think it's because there's no other new episodes of the other 3 shows. So people were just like, well, and they're like, it's going to be on Netflix in a week.
Yeah, there's that too. Or on the app in less than a day.
Right, and we discussed that we didn't think that the app views were accounted for in this Nielsen Live and Live Plus DVR ratings. So I tend to think that they got more ratings than this for the season finale, and it was a great season finale. So what we talk about every week is we take the title and we construct it into the main theme of the episode as it should be, and this one was Aruba. So, Chris, what do you think? What do you got going on with Aruba and this episode?
Well, simply put, it's Mick's brilliant plan of how to deal with all of these problems is the hell with them. Just go to a beach in Aruba.
I am for this plan. As a matter of fact, we should not do this podcast and go to Aruba right now, right, Michelle?
Or we could go to Aruba and then podcast with some nice drinks in our hands and people bringing us stuff. And
I have the equipment. This can be done.
All right, guys. We're headed to Aruba. We'll see you later.
Bye. In the meantime, as we wait for our flight, why don't we finish this podcast and let's talk about all the great fight scenes, because fights in superhero TV shows and movies is what one of the key factors is. And Chris, you are our resident fight expert here on the Starling Tribune. So why don't you go start running down all the great fights that we saw in this episode?
Well, like SP said, we did have quite a few of them. We start out with a fight where Ray realizes that, hey, my suit's probably still being held by Damian. It's got to be somewhere. So he decides they're going to go get it. Well, we forgot Damian Dark is basically Darth Vader at this point in time. He totally force chokes both Ray and Jax. The tiny Wave Rider comes in first to save the day. The intense look on the captain's face. Gideon, fire at will. And it's just pretty much a light show. It does no damage, and Damian Dark laughs at him and mocks him. That's why it's good why our boy Mick Rory comes up from behind and knocks him out.
Pew, 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 pew.
It was kind of funny, though. I mean, let's be honest, to see the Wave Rider there just kind of doing absolutely nothing. Like, oh, these weapons are going to hurt. This is going to be great. And no, it's like a gnat stinging at a person.
Gideon, fire everything. Just fire it all.
That was adorable.
I also enjoyed the fact that they enlarged the Wave Rider inside Star Labs. Regardless of the timeline or the world, Star Labs just can't catch a break.
That's true. I mean, they popped the ceiling off of it. Here's my question to you guys, because I was thinking about this when I was watching this scene. When did the crew have a chance to board? Because the Wave Rider takes off right afterwards.
Magic.
Well, Sarah and Nate are punching some bad guys. I guess somehow they forced... Well, no, Stein is left behind because he's still Doomworld Stein.
Okay, so Ray uses his Embiggen Ray to make it bigger, but he's outside of it, and presumably it just gets bigger, and they're still standing outside. So when do they have a chance to get inside the Wave Rider? Because the Wave Rider just gets big and flies right out. There's no chance for them to get on board.
Because plot!
Poor editing.
It was a cool visual, but I got lost in that. Like, okay, bye, Wave Rider. What about the rest of the guys? Hey. All right. So, Chris, what else do we have in terms of fights?
We had quite a few. Next up, we've got a fight outside the Wave Runner as they move back to, 1914, World War I, where you've got our legends meeting the second group of legends from the original timeline. It's really weird. We need to figure out how to describe them, like Legends Prime and Legends 2, something like that. Well, there's kind of a conflict out there because we can't let them get back on the ship where we've got our three guys that have the spear. So they find out eventually, hey, these are the bad guys. Ray punches Sarah, tries again, which is kind of funny because really Ray's going to take on Sarah.
I know, but he's gotten better.
He doesn't even have the suit, though.
Ray thinks that Sarah is fake.
That's true.
So he doesn't think he's actually going up against League of Assassins Sarah.
That's fair. So everyone takes on everyone. Mick gets to hit Jax. Then Nate eventually steals up and just knocks the crap out of Sarah. And is like, ooh, maybe that is her, they realize. Also a funny moment.
It's great because they tried to do the Scooby-Doo thing with taking off the mask from her. And Rip's like, oh, no, she's real.
I would have got away with it if it weren't for you darn kids.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. So they get past themselves or they talk to themselves, which I'm thinking all sorts of bad time travel stuff here, but we'll get to that in a second. What else do we got going on in the fights department, Chris?
So the past selves, basically you get the Legion versus the Legends with all of our legends, be it the original ones and the secondary timeline ones, you get a pretty wicked fight. And eventually Damian and Malcolm kind of just get tired of things and realize, let's go back to the old way of doing things. Instead of using laser guns and things like that, let's just pull out the swords and the bows and arrows, and let's just start taking people out. And yeah, they totally do. I mean, they shoot Jax, then they kill Jax from the original time frame, I guess is the best way to describe him.
No, they killed Jax from Doomworld.
Doomworld, okay.
Yeah, everybody from Doomworld is a time aberration.
Right. And they die. Spoilers.
Or just fade away into nothing.
Right.
Same thing.
That's fair.
So you got that going on. And then at the very end, Sarah uses the spear in the midst of about a billion thorns just running around, not being very effective, honestly.
They start to beat everybody, and then Sarah has to use the spear, and, you know, she wants to give it to Amaya, and then Amaya gets taken out.
Thawne kills the aberration ray by just going up to him and taking out his heart. There's no need for all this running around stuff. All he has to do is sneak up behind them and take out their hearts.
And has an army of speedsters. That's kind of what I'm thinking, too, is why do you need to have the, let me punch steel with six different speedsters going super speed? I mean, it seems if I had an army of speedsters, I might have had a slightly different plan, which is, you know, get the spear. Unless he didn't trust any of them to get the spear, because they're all basically him.
I could see that.
Now my brain hurts.
Not trusting yourself, definitely, because you know what you're going to do with it.
He says that if you want something done, you need to do it yourself. And maybe he's preparing for maybe a third set of legends to show up just in case he's not too sure how many times the idiots are going to try this.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah, maybe. I guess, yeah, just trying to bring in enough to overwhelm. Overwhelming force, I believe, is the term that the Army and the Marines use. In the meantime, Michelle, we have a lot of time travel going on in this episode, and you are the Starling Tribune time travel expert. So why don't you lead us down all the time travel that has occurred in this episode?
Okay, so in the Doom World version of Central City 2017, they get the team back together, except Stein, who, you know, there's no memory gun. And so they leave Aberration Stein behind. And then they go back to France, 1916. And then they try really hard not to interfere with themselves, because as Rip got to be full time master in this episode, because he's like, this is not a good idea. Why are we doing this? And it's like, because we got to get the spear. And they know that if they succeed, they will disappear because they are the aberrations. Now, their first plan is to go into the middle of the battlefield, get the blood, and that's what Ray does. Ray goes, boom, full everything, gets it, and then Doom World Thawne comes, and he's like, I knew you idiots were going to do this. He takes out Ray and then destroys the blood. And then they try to steal the spear from the Wave Rider when the guys are going to the church. And then they go in, and at first they're like, hey, this is going to be easy. Mick is like, I can lead this. It's a heist. But then they encounter their actual current selves, the real legends, and they kind of blow it, especially Nate, who just goes all goobity goobity. And then they end up together and they create a time quake, and then they want to jump and they create a time storm because they're all together and they want to do a time storm, and that does awful things. And then eventually Sarah uses the spear, has that moment. Boy, this episode has a lot of time travel. And then afterwards, she basically frees the Black Flash. The Black Flash comes and takes care of Thawne, and in a really cool effect, you know, all the Thawnes disappear, and then we learn they broke time.
Badly.
Wow.
So I think it's important to note that the time storm was created when they had both crews on board the time Wave Rider, and then they tried to do a time jump. I think that's important to note. That is a useful piece of information for the future if you want to use it to your advantage. So point legends on knowing that. And also the whole spear thing, and we'll get into it a little bit later, but the Laurel popping up and the fact that she okays Sarah to do what she's about to do, that was just an awesome moment in Legends of Tomorrow, regardless of how you think about Laurel. But at the end, they break time. I had remembered this, but I kind of had forgotten how monumental it was. They were in LA in 2017 with buildings that were just crazy. Did you see that one skyscraper that was corkscrewing on up? And then they've got dinosaurs there. Dinosaurs in LA 2017. Yeah, I think they might have screwed up something when they went back a billion years to, what was her name again? Ray's friend?
Gertrude.
Yeah, I think Gertrude has something to do with this, because I think Gertrude decided to work on time travel after they left her. And so you've got that mess to clean up as well.
And I like how Rip is just like, hey, you know what? I'm going to take the jump ship. Peace out.
Yeah, and now they're without a jump ship. I wouldn't have been okay with that. I'd be, okay, Rip, we'll drop you off somewhere. I'm not going to give him the jump ship.
They did get his ship out of the deal, so I mean, kind of a good trade.
Yeah, but you don't have a lifeboat anymore. You need a lifeboat.
Yeah, you can go get another one. Just, they've already screwed up time enough. Just travel back to before they defeated the Time Lords and take more Time Masters.
I guess.
Or Jackson will build one in the off season. He needs a new project.
He does, now that he knows the Wave Rider.
Yeah, see, problem solved.
All right. Just replicate one, like Star Trek, right?
Yeah, that's what Voyager did for how many years?
Yeah, well, did they really replicate shuttles? Because they built the whole, what was the name, Delta Flyer?
They built the Delta Flyer after they had lost the equivalent of like 27 shuttles. And that's probably a slight over-exaggeration, but they did regularly blow up shuttles and then magically have more in there. I'm like, you know, that kind of ship's not supposed to carry more than like maybe four shuttles. What the heck's going on, guys? But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, that's continuity in Voyager. We're here in Legends of Tomorrow, so we'll...
You said continuity in Voyager.
Ah, funny.
I did like that show. I did.
I did too.
You like episode one, SP?
Yeah, episode one of Star Wars. Episode one, we're talking about the Phantom Menace, not necessarily the pilot of Voyager. All right, let's move on to Sarah Lance. She's the captain of the Wave Rider, as cemented by what happens in the end here. But we not only have one Sarah Lance, we have two Sarah Lances, and we rate the captain every episode. So I'm a little, which Sarah Lance are we supposed to rate here? Michelle, help me out. Why don't you like draw some lines for me?
Okay, so Doomworld Sarah is our Sarah who messed up and lost the spear. And then we have present Sarah. So they are aspects of each other. So I think we can rate her overall, because they are the same person. That's how the paradox happens. And it's funny when they actually echo each other. They actually answer, you know, Gideon's like captain and they're like, yes. And they actually say the same words, which was really cool. So I think we could, Sarah.
Works for me.
All right. So Chris, Sarah, how would you rate her and her plans for the episode?
Well, she did a good job of having to think on her feet because all the plans kept going wrong. That being said, I don't know they had any other choice to try and fix everything than to break time as it is, but I'm not sure that breaking time and breaking the cardinal rule is quite the best idea, as we've seen at the end of the episode and the repercussions we'll have in season three. So I don't know, six?
Michelle, it's six. That's, I think, a low mark, but what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, she has good plans. She really wasn't expecting Nate to go all stupid when he sees Amaya. Because, yes, she died in the alternate world, but then he just was like, and he makes them late. So that, you know, that was a really good plan. Mick wasn't, you know, had good execution of Sarah's plan. Nate ruined it. Nate ruins a lot of things.
Yes.
And, you know, the Sarahs talked out. They do have good plans. Sarah actually uses the spear in a very logical way. She was tempted. She had that moment. And she's like, yes, I have this darkness, but I'm going to overcome it. And the fact that she basically, all she does, she takes the power away from the spear and calls the Black Flash to take care of Thawne. I'm thinking an eight,
a six and an eight. Yeah. I think Chris's six was driven by the fact that Laurel was in this episode.
Had nothing to do with it.
I'm sure it did. Because I think that was a very pivotal and important scene. Like I said before, no matter how you feel about Laurel, how she dealt with Sarah and how she led Sarah through that conversation and what Sarah needed to do, I think was very important. And then Sarah came through with a very important way of dealing with the spear, of fixing things, depowering it, and then calling on the Black Flash to take care of Thawne. I think it was very well done, and I think she dealt with the rest of the situations as best as she could. Like, when the second crew showed up, I would be on immediate alert that it would be the Legion versus them. And then she adapted very quickly when she found out that it was indeed them and that they had to do something different to figure out how to prevent Doomworld from happening. Even though I don't think they didn't hear it called Doomworld, so they have no recollection of that or anything. It's basically been wiped from existence. So I don't know. I'd have to go with an 8 as well. An 8 for Captain Lance. So basically, Chris, what I'm saying is you're outvoted.
That's fine. Still averages out to a 7.
7 point something.
Whatever. Math is hard.
We'll figure it out as we go. And something else that is hard would be the exosuit of Rey. So he died a couple of times, I guess, in this episode, at least once, right?
At least once, yeah. The hardness of his suit didn't really save him from a speedster brother or speedster guy ripping his heart out of his chest.
That's because you can vibrate straight through it.
That's true. I mean, you would think the more dense a material, the harder it would be to vibrate through or something like that.
But he's a very experienced speedster.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's like his go-to move.
It's pretty badass, too. I mean, to literally die and see someone holding your heart in front of you. What a way to kill someone.
And when you're basically bleeding out internally. Ugh. Okay, let's move on to Mick. And I think Mick pretty much redeemed himself from everything that he did. Even though he just wanted to go to Aruba, the way he dealt with stuff, especially with his partner at the end with the flashy thingy. Okay, let's back up. Is this the first time we've seen the flashy thingy in Legends of Tomorrow?
No. They have wiped memories before. I don't know if they've used flashy thingies or pills or a combination of both, but they have wiped memories before.
I just figured they were channeling Men in Black with the flashy thingy.
Yeah, of course. But Mick takes care of his partner, puts his partner on a good path, and that's all cool, especially since we know Wentworth Miller is coming back next year.
Yes, as a new version of Snart, which is going to toy with poor Mick again.
Yeah, I feel bad for him.
Yeah, because, you know, he says, you know, he sees himself as a better man. I don't have a partner. I have a team. So he's going to go through the ringer again by seeing Snart as a third version.
But it is good character growth for Mick in this regard, as he finally stops seeing himself as the lackey of the henchman. He's a member of a team. He's got friends, things like that. And he wants to put Snart onto the path where he actually becomes a good man as well.
Indeed, a better man. Both of them. You know, with Firestorm, I'm trying to rack my brain on the importance of them this episode, other than they fired up and they got to throw some fireballs at the end. I just didn't see either of them as really important in this episode.
Jefferson got to be self-sacrificing, which was kind of a cool moment to see Doomworld Jax save Stein with his life.
Yeah, both Jax got hit by an arrow.
Right. They took an arrow to the upper body, or else they would have been an adventurer. I ruined that joke. I apologize.
You did.
I ruined it bad.
Well, there's like, how many characters were there? 2 Sarahs, 2 Rays, 2 Nates, 2 Jacks, a Stein, 2 Rips. That's like 11, if my math is correct. That's a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking a little bit selfishly about this and the fact that Stein was left on Doomworld and the fact that the Doomworld Ray died at the beginning. It's because they just didn't want to do all that much CGI at the end battle.
True. Budget.
Budget, that's a good way to put it.
And then you only had one Nate that could steal up as well.
Correct.
How'd you like the Nate versus Nate conversation, Michelle?
First off, I liked how Nate basically Kaiser Soze'd his excuse when he looked at the map and he was like Galapagos Islands, and then he looked at the bookshelf and he saw 1984. If you've seen the Usual Suspects, you know what I mean by that. It was really a cheat because really haven't liked Amaya and Nate together because that was really, you know, rushed in their chemistry. But then Nate had a year in Doomworld to figure out how he felt. And so now he gets to go back and go, hey, dude, you love her. Don't waste time. Get with her. And all of a sudden, at the end, it's like, I love you, man. So, ugh.
I did kind of like the moment where the one Nate's dying, he looks up and is like, don't be a douche. And you see Amaya like, what? And the other Nate walks up, okay, you got it. That was funny to me. I don't know why.
It was funny because at that point in time, everybody accepted that the Doomworld people were expendable at that point anyway. I mean, they were going to die either way. I mean, if they fixed the timeline, they'd all go away or they would die in protecting it. So there you go. Amaya, she's interesting. When did she pick up those ruby shoes?
They were a present.
That's right.
From Christmas.
Yeah, Nate gave it to her for Christmas. That's right. So she's packing those up as a memento to go back to 1942. But then she changes her mind, which was interesting. She's not ready to go back yet. So we have them on the Wave Rider for another year, maybe?
Maybe. I mean, but you've got to realize this is doomed to end at some point unless you're going to rewrite history. And it's just going to make it hurt all the worse when it ends now.
Here's the thing. I'm going to go back to this. We only know that Vixen gives birth to a daughter and there's another daughter. We don't know who the baby daddies are. So Nate could end up going to Zimbabwe with Amaya and he could be the dad.
It's possible, I guess. Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
It's kind of where I'm assuming at this point in time, because unless something does happen with Nate and he dies, I just see that as the natural progression, maybe at the end of the next season. So we'll see. All right, Rip Hunter is interesting because not only do we get the one Rip Hunter, but we get two Rip Hunters. And it's interesting because I'm trying to see his character progression from what we know was going to happen in season three. And he's going to be at odds with this team and he's complimenting them. But at the same time, I'm thinking he's seen the havoc that they've wreaked on the time stream, and he's going to have to fix that. So recreating the Time Masters is in his future. So I'm just watching that progression of him in this episode. It's kind of neat to see once you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, he is just, we shouldn't be doing this. I really don't like this. This is violating rule number one. Can't we think of something else? And you know, he's like, we can't time jump with everybody on board. It's a time storm. Yes, you guys are a team and you basically know what you're doing, but I gotta leave.
Know what they're doing. You see, that's the thing. I think he thinks that they don't know what they're doing. Like, they know what they're doing to operate the ship and travel through time, but they don't know what they're doing in terms of protecting time. I think that's what his issue is, because I think in his mind, they brought this on themselves.
Well, he says that reality hadn't set yet. The reason why they were able to go back to 1916 to their original selves is because the rewritten reality from 2017 hadn't come back and set yet. So that was convenient. So he knew that they were rushing against time, that he said that we're in a race. So I guess eventually that's why he was kind of on board with this. And he's like, you guys are a great team. You work well together. I can't teach you any more about any of that. I wonder, do you think when he leaves, he's like, I know I gotta go fix things?
Yeah, I think he's thinking in terms of being the overseer of everything. And he's headed back to the, what's it called? The zero point.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's headed back there and he's going to reconstitute the ability to look over everything and see all the ripples in time that the Legends of Tomorrow are creating whenever they go and fix something. And then he's going to create some sort of B or C team to go back there. As a matter of fact, I was thinking in terms of all the other Wave Riders that are out there. You know, some of them I think were destroyed inside the station or city or whatever that is. And I think he's going to start reconstituting the ships and then crew them. Not by himself, but he'll find other people to do it in order to keep the Legends of Tomorrow in check and keep other people in check that try to do what the Legion of Doom did. So I think that's where we're heading in season three.
I think Rip has realized that someone needs to look at the big picture, which is something the Legends haven't done a great job of, you could say, throughout this season, because they're not always thinking of the consequences of the actions. And that's something that kind of got beat on us a lot in season one, is everything here is going to have consequences of some kind. And that's what you had your Time Masters overseeing, is what does this one action do? And what is that ripple that changes everything? And if you think about it, Rip's the last of them. He might be the best person to kind of sit there on the edge of things and watch and see, and be like, what did they just do here? This has had repercussions across multiple different places in the timeline, and then have to try and fix it. And which then could lead to some interesting points where he has to be like, what you guys just did is dumb. We need to fix this in season three.
The one thing that takes pause with me is that there will be nobody watching over him. So he needs some sort of a board of directors over him, not to take control of things, but to guide him as he goes forward. And that simply doesn't exist at this point in time. So,
right. Not to say there won't be one at some point, but he's actually got to rebuild everything to get to a point where that can happen.
Yep. And to make it such that the board of directors, or whatever that oversight board is, doesn't take matters into their own hands and try to create destiny on their own as well. They should be directing the person that's in charge of everything, not necessarily doing it themselves. All right. We had the Legion of Doom pretty much disbanded in this episode. We had Thawne, or all of the Thawnes, that were erased from existence. And I think it was pretty cool how they went. I think he should have prepared himself for that eventuality in whatever event that he was doing. And because he didn't, everything that he did was meaningless at that point.
I don't think he was thinking super logically. I think he was kind of just hacked off at that point too.
Definitely, because he wanted his Doom world to continue, and he thought that was the answer to everything.
Right.
It's like the whole Back to the Future thing. What makes Doc and Marty right? What are they doing that says, for without a doubt, you are doing the right thing? There's nothing. And so even if you're doing stuff for the right reasons, you might not be creating a great future for everyone. And I think that's what Thawne's issue was. Even though he created the Doom world in which he was able to survive, it wasn't the best for everybody. And so it ended up being meaningless in the end when everything was erased. I particularly liked how Damian and Malcolm were left off in this. Malcolm was left off in his apartment, and no other explanation given. Just, you're there in 2016, and then I assume goes forward to the Arrow events of last year. But Damian, I was interested, what do you guys think of that? He was left off in Miami just to carry out his life and everything that he does, including kill Laurel.
Well, you have to, so that you don't disrupt the timeline. I mean, and Laurel's finally sort of at peace with the fact that she can't stop, not Laurel, Sarah's rather, finally at peace with the fact that she can't stop Laurel from dying by killing Damian in the past. It's kind of a nice progression there, and finally a nice acknowledgement of that. So yeah, he's pretty much just dropped back into things so that everything that happened before can happen again. The real question is, how are they fitting him into season three?
And Michelle, what do you think about Damian and how he was left off?
Yeah, I know, it was really funny. He's like, so I killed a bunch of people, wanted to rewrite reality, and I'm being dropped off in Miami in this silly little outfit. And it's like, yep.
With no socks.
Because your destiny has to go.
Overall, I thought it was a pretty decent finale. I know a lot of people think this is the fourth best show on CW as far as the comic book shows go. I actually enjoy it. It's got sci-fi. You got to put your brain in park for a lot of it. I mean, it's popcorn comic book sci-fi sorts of stuff, but I think they did it pretty well considering the budget that they had and the storylines that they're kind of stuck with. Michelle, what do you think?
Oh, it was really fun. It was all mind twisty and such, but that's Legends. Sit back, enjoy, mix one-liners, have some fun, and just go with it. I have to admit, Supergirl, you know, it's kind of number one for me. Then this, because Flash kind of went dark. And then, like, Arrow had its moments and everything, but this, I was always looking forward to watching every week.
Yeah, Chris, your final thoughts?
This is my favorite of the DC TV shows right now because it doesn't try to put on airs about what it is. It knows it's a fun show. You come here, there might be some dark moments, there might be some funny moments, but the predominant thing that's going to happen is you're going to have fun. There's going to be wacky hijinks that take place. There's a fun team. They don't have the almost overwhelming sense of darkness that you had with Flash and depressingness that you had at times with both Flash and Arrow this season. It's mostly fun, and that's why I like it, is because I'm like, okay, this is my show. I know I'm going to kick back, and I don't have to engage my brain a ton. I'm just going to enjoy myself. And I don't mean that to sound like a slight saying engage my brain a ton. It's just I don't have to think about every little thing that happens in here. It's not like an episode of Battlestar Galactica where everything's connected. It's just fun, and it's superheroes. What's not to like?
As much as I love The Expanse, it's the exact same thing that you just described with BSG. You have to look at everything going on. As a matter of fact, I've rewatched the first season a couple of times, and I picked up different things each time I watched that. And I'm sure the same thing would happen here, but not to the same extent. It's just a fun watch, and out of the four shows, I definitely enjoy it. All right, Michelle, there actually is even another show. We talked about the four shows that are currently on CW, but there's actually a fifth show that we can successfully say is on CW right now.
Yeah, we're going to be talking in our next episode about Vixen. On Wednesday, August 30th, the CW is actually going to air seasons one and two as a movie event. If you can't wait, you can actually go to the CW Seed and watch Vixen seasons one and two. And it's an animated series, and what it's about, it is based on the DC character Mari McCabe, a costumed superhero crime fighter with the power to mimic the abilities of any animal that has ever lived on Earth. The series is set in the same fictional universe as Arrow, The Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. And as a matter of fact, in the animated series, you know, there's Cisco makes an appearance, as does The Flash and The Green Arrow. Directors are James Tucker and Kurt Gitta, and a lot of writers, including Lauren Certo, Nolan Dunbar, Brian Ford Sullivan, Wendy Miracle, Kito Shimizu, and Sarah Tarkoff.
It'll be interesting to see. I have not seen this, so I'm very interested. I'm going to set my DVR to make sure I get it. But as you mentioned, it's all on the CW Seed right now anyway. So looking forward to that next time. In the meantime, we're going to move on to some news. Straight from the Starling Tribune main news desk in Starling City on Earth 2, Michelle, you have a news story that leads off with Wendy Miracle talking a little bit about Arrow.
Yeah, she was talking about Michael Emerson, who is set to recur during season 6 in an undisclosed mystery role. During TV Line's fall preview Q&A with showrunner Wendy Miracle, it was confirmed that Emerson will be playing one of at least two main threats to Oliver Queen. She said this character that we're having Michael play is somewhat similar to people he has played in the past. But we had many conversations with him about how to make it different and what elements we could bring to the character to change it up. Whoever he's playing, the bosses are loving what they're seeing. Miracle said he is a dream to work with, and I think he's doing an amazing job. We've seen some dailies of some of his episodes, and he is just fantastic. He's a really understated, subtle actor, and that brings a different energy on set. It's great.
Looking forward to seeing all the shows as they premiere in the fall, but definitely Arrow as it moves on to season 6. Moving on to the rest of the shows in the CWDC universe, Chris, you have a little bit of news about Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah, we might have mentioned Battlestar Galactica a couple times this episode because this news was in the back of my head. The Flash has added Katie Sackhoff as a villain upcoming this season. She's joined the cast of The Flash in a recurring role, according to Entertainment Weekly. She'll play the DC Comics villain, Amunet Black, aka Blacksmith, who is a steely, badass boss of an underground black market for supervillains. She uses every possible means, including the long list of metahumans under her thumb, to ensure her illicit enterprise thrives. She is first going to appear in episode 405, which is entitled Girls Night Out, which is going to serve as a mini crossover with Arrow, in which Emily Bett Rickards will also pop up during the hour. So hey, spoiler alert, she's not going to die on Leanne Yu.
good to know that, I guess.
Depending on who you ask.
She's going to pop up during the hour, but we don't know if it's going to be a flashback.
Yes, that's possible.
Yeah, so that's not for sure, but we'll see what happens there. Now, Michelle, you mentioned that Supergirl is your favorite show on CW right now.
Yes, and I have some news. According to the bosses, Andrew Kreisberg told DW that Maggie will not die. The person who plays her, Floriana Lima, she's not returning to Supergirl as a series regular. She's decided to move on. They have assured fans that she will be written out so she can come back when the actor becomes available. So this is good news that they are not going to kill a gay, which is an unfortunate trend in some TV shows. So it's really nice to know Maggie won't die.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the reality of the issue is that I don't think we're really going to see her again, because we've seen a lot of these actors and actresses that have been written out with the intention that we can bring them back whenever. I think that's just a nice way to say that we'd like to have her on. It's just not going to happen, but we're not killing her. So I don't know. Michelle, what do you think? Are they going to bring her back? I just don't see her availability being there. We've seen it before with Huntress.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things these shows cast really good actors. And if they don't sign them up on a contract to be recurring, then they go and they find another job. We can't blame these actors for just getting another job. I mean, if you're sitting at home going, I have a mortgage to pay and some bills to pay, maybe Supergirl might hire me again. Maybe they won't. I haven't been offered anything. So yeah, I'm going to go find some other work. And that's probably what's going to happen. But it's really just nice to know that they are going to just write her out, send her off into the sunset. Yes, Alex is going to be sad, but then she can get another girlfriend. So that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool as well. And talking about somebody that has been in and out of Legends of Tomorrow, Chris, you have a little teaser on what's going to happen with that show in season 3 from the executive producer, Phil Klemmer.
Yeah, Phil Klemmer did clue us in on a few things that might be happening with season 3. He did say Jonah Hex has a chance of coming back to the Legends, and that this season promises to be darker and more supernatural, which is where Dark is going to fit in. He also said about Leonard Snart's return that, quote, it will be about as polar opposite as the Snart that he's played on our show. We've got a cool pitch to justify that version of him, which I don't want to give away, but it's going to be really traumatic for Mick Rory because he has defied this version of his dead partner in his head. And in a way, Snart's return is his greatest wish come true. But the fact that he doesn't get the version that he's held in the back of his mind is pretty much going to be deeply unsettling. Rory's made a lot of progress as well in the meantime, but he's certainly not ready to call himself a hero. So looks like Mick's going to get run through the ringer a little bit by having Snart back in play.
I don't doubt that at all. The two have an interesting dynamic since Leonard has left the show. Michelle, you have the last news story for the week about the giant DC film box set.
Yes, a few episodes on the podcast mentioned that this box set was going to become available. Well, the collection is an enormous Blu-ray box set that will include all 30 films released up until this point. That's the animated movies. So it's everything but the upcoming Gotham by Gaslight. It will have newly released commemorative editions of Wonder Woman and Justice League, The New Frontier, as well as all 5 DC Showcase animated shorts. So this is available to pre-order on Amazon for $299.99. It's $300. It's covered by Amazon's pre-order price guarantee. So if it drops in price, you get the cheaper price. And it's supposed to be released November 7th. So 30 films at $300, that's $10 a movie, if my math is correct. Not bad.
But the problem is a lot of us own some of these movies already because it's, what, 10 years worth of stuff? Now, I don't own all 30, but I probably own 10, 12 of those. So it's a tougher sell in that regard because I can't pick, well, let me go and resell my old ones because I'll get about $3 max from Amazon for each one of them.
Yeah, this is a huge chunk of change for your average person that watches the movies, but it does have its upsides for specialized markets. Say you own a second home, a vacation home somewhere, and you'd just like to have some movies there for viewing. So this would be great. Or if you know that Christmas is coming up and that you have a very in-tuned DC-oriented friend, you might want to give this box set to them as well, especially if they're a younger generation, like a college student, somebody that's left home and might not have these movies available to them.
That's true. One other thing to consider is I do know they're also available for pre-order in the iTunes store as well. So you can buy the digital versions of them, which means you could watch them pretty much anywhere you go.
Is this box set going to have digital versions available?
Nobody's quite sure on that, to be honest. So a definitive maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll keep our eyes on that, and Michelle will let us know if something changes with that. All right, Chris, do you have anything else before we transition out for the week?
Guys, this is when we like to remind you that the Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of a network of shows that you can find over at the Gunna Geek Network by heading over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. We have something like, we have a lot of podcasts there. I don't even know the current count right now because we've added a bunch recently. But they cover a variety of topics. Some of them are specific to certain television shows like The Flash and Arrow. Others are about general geek culture. There is guaranteed to be something over at the Gunna Geek Network that's probably going to be something that you'll find an interest in. We'll find whatever that geek interest you have is, and we'll give you a podcast for it. And this week, we want to highlight one specific show. It is the Strange Unusual Productions Letters to Asmodeus, Episode 11. Tonight, we once again have the vampire a-hole Asmodeus with several letters of ill-considered origin and some just plain bad advice. Remember what Uncle Lawrence says, you can't sue us, we told you not to listen to him. So, go check it out. It is a great storytelling podcast. The story has been quite entertaining, and it's well worth checking out. Head on over to GunnaGeek.com and check it out for yourself. But guys, I think we're going to start wrapping things up. A big thank you to everyone who did participate in the live show. I've seen quite a few people popping up in the Twitch chat this week. And also, thank you to everyone who has downloaded the episode or any of the replays that are available online in places like Spreaker, YouTube, and just our show RSS feed.
And remember, you can always catch us live as we record via www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays, as we're just a few weeks away now for the new Berlantiverse year, and of course, specifically the sixth season of CW's Arrow.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, that's another great episode, guys, and it wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag, really? Goonies?
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag, math is hard.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag, timey-wimey gobbledygook. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.